comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going to revisit a UFO incident. A UFO event, a UFO sighting that is probably one of the most witnessed UFO sightings in history. Now, this UFO sighting is the one that we have come to call the Phoenix Lights. You may be asking yourself, well, okay, I mean, the Phoenix Lights was interesting, and you know, but I mean, why keep going back to the, why would we go back to the Phoenix Lights? Well, the Phoenix Lights was witnessed by, it's been estimated, up to 10,000 people. You would think that if 10,000 people see something, then that should be good, solid evidence, right? I mean, you know, it only takes two people witnessing a murder, sometimes one, you get a conviction in court, the guy gets sentenced to the death penalty, and it's done. Two witnesses. And somebody loses their life on the testimony of those two witnesses. This is 10,000 witnesses. Among those 10,000 witnesses, there were many pilots. There were many who were former pilots. Some were military pilots, you know, former military, like the governor of Arizona, fighter pilot. So why would this be such a hotly debated UFO sighting? With that many witnesses of that quality, why would this be a hotly debated UFO sighting? You would think this would be an open and shut case with 10,000 witnesses, and among those 10,000, lots of pilots and military people and former military people. Well, it's hotly debated primarily because of the completely unflyable story that the U.S. Air Force put out later. Now, immediately after the sighting, during the sighting and after the sighting, they were saying, we didn't have any jets up there. And then, oh yeah, we forgot. We did have some jets up there that were dropping flares. 10,000 witnesses, among them military, among them pilots and former pilots, who know exactly what flares look like. And not one of them stepped forward and said, yep, that's flares. And so the U.S. Air Force wants us to believe 10,000 people were wrong. We'll be back. Yeah. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I was saying when we went away for break, this story that the debunkers and the Air Force put out, this story would have us believe that all of those witnesses, estimated to be as many as 10,000, were all wrong. They were all wrong. And the specially anointed wise men, the debunkers, are all right. Well, you know what I think about that? What I think about that is, when was the last time you saw a cow and you allowed somebody to convince you it was a Cadillac? It's never happened, has it? Well, why would you allow that to happen with a UFO sighting, especially one seen by so many thousands of people? Well, yeah, but the Air Force said they dropped flares. And? I mean, they've told us everything over the years, from weather balloons to arrays of weather balloons to crash test dummies to, oh my. I mean, they've got really bad script writers, but there at least is some variety in the stories. 10,000 people, and among them, pilots and military people, and nobody stepped forward out of that crowd that saw the Phoenix lights. None of those people stepped forward and said, yeah, I've got a lot of experience with airplanes and flares. And you know, those are flares. Nobody. Last week in Washington, D.C., Robert Hastings and Bob Salas hosted a press conference at the National Press Club. You know about that. You've heard about it. Well, guess what? We had people, military people, stepping forward in that press conference, people who, in whose hands we had entrusted nuclear weapons. They stepped forward in that press conference, and they told their stories about UFOs showing up at their nuclear installations. In some cases, it would be a missile installation, a missile site. And in some cases, what they told about were UFOs showing up and then interference happening with the missiles, with the controls. Now, the press, for whatever reason, decided to treat this as news. They didn't do their little moronic ridicule and chuckle and nonsense. Most of them didn't. Most of the major media handled this as news, which in fact it is. And the question that we have asked on this show, and that a lot of you have asked in emails that you've sent to me, the question is, what happened? Who gave the controlled media the go-ahead to report this as news? Something happened. Gears shifted. Now, it may be time for us to look back at the Phoenix lights. It may be time, in fact, I think it is time, for us to look back at the Phoenix lights and understand that it's only hotly debated because there are fevered minds working overtime to throw trash in the road ahead of us. They want us to believe that all 20,000 eyes trained on these, on this incident were wrong, and that every single one of those 10,000 people who saw this, their minds were wrong. That's what they want us to believe. Now, I've got to tell you, I simply don't have that much faith. It's not possible for me to muster enough faith to believe that all 10,000 of these people were wrong. My guest this evening is Mike Fortson. Mike is, he's been with us before, and he's one of the best informed guests that we have on the show. And he says he's not a ufologist, but he's a witness to the Phoenix lights, and he took it upon himself to really study this event and to talk to witnesses, other witnesses. And he's just an amazing repository of information. Mike Fortson from the Phoenix area, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm glad to be here.
Mike, when you were with us before, we, you know, we talked about the Phoenix Lights in depth, and we're going to do the same thing again tonight because I think a lot of people have not got the story. I know they haven't, and it's even a misnomer when we call it the Phoenix Lights. It was far more than that.
Well, Kevin, if I can, you know, I hate that term, Phoenix Lights. I've always hated that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not correct. It's not correct by no means to say. It did not just happen over Phoenix. It happened throughout the entire state of Arizona that night. It began in Norfolk, Virginia. It was also seen in Iowa and Nebraska as well before it came to Arizona. I've always called it the massive UFO flyover of Arizona, March 13th, 1997. That's what accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is more accurate.
Phoenix Lights are basically the six videos that you constantly see during every TV show or every TV interview or documentary. It's the only videos, really, that anyone has, and they're basically distant lights. They are more than likely flares. The Air Force did participate in a flare drop that night. It was, well, just a few minutes past the 10 o'clock hour that night. There were six mountainside homes that did get videos of it. Dr. McAbee, Bruce McAbee, in his conclusion stated that with all determinations, more than likely those distant lights are flares. What the tens of thousands of people, the witnesses throughout the state of Arizona saw, though, was in the 8 o'clock hour. And one of the biggest deceptions that the media kept putting out was they kept mixing the two up together. So whenever a witness from the 8 o'clock hour talked about the long or V-shaped craft, they would show the flare footage in the background, thus mm-hmm. really confusing everyone, thinking they got video of the craft, which they do not, and they're showing flares. So there is a debunking effort from day one on this.
You know, it was a well-coordinated cover by, and look, I'm not saying that they suddenly ordered these guys to go out and drop flares in order to cover this. The flare drop may have, in fact, been something already scheduled, but they used it in a well-coordinated way, as you're describing, to confuse the issues and to get people to say, oh, it's just flares, it's just flares. Well, okay, I mean, that's about as valid as saying that flares they dropped on July 22nd were flares, and therefore there could not have been these craft over Phoenix. I mean, I don't know if you catch my drift, but I mean, you know, that happened at 10 o'clock, but the sightings were at 8.
And I've been in this area since 1987.
Say again, you've done what since 1987? Mike, are you there? I guess not. Well, we'll see if we can get Mike back on the line here. Okay, is that you, Mike? Well, this is going to be interesting, folks. I know you think there's something wrong with these telephones. There isn't. Unless somebody decides they want something to be wrong with these telephones. Mike, are you with us?
I'm here.
Well, Mike, you know, we're stomping on some toes. I am stomping on some toes, and I will stomp right now and say again that the morons who want to play games with us, you need to understand you've lost. It's over. Game over. You have lost.
Amen, brother. Right on.
Cat's out of the bag here.
Frank Warren. I've had calls like that with Frank Warren. We'll be talking, and then just all of a sudden, just nothing. It just blanks out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both on Verizon. We both have, you know, I mean, everything's right. Everything should work and everything, and we just both get cut off. So
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know where we were at, but if
you said something about 1987.
Okay, it was the altitude. It was the flares. That's what set it off, because Dr. Bruce McAbee said in his conclusion that those flares had to have ignited around 17,000 foot altitude in order to be seen in the Phoenix area. Well, the A-10, the Warthog, it's designed to drop the LUU-2 flare at 6,000 feet. That's its designated, because the whole purpose of the flare is to illuminate.
Mm-hmm.
It's dropped at 6,000 foot altitude. It ignites at 3,000, and it extinguishes at 500 feet. But these flares, the ones that were seen drop by the A-10, supposedly from the Maryland Air National Guard, were ignited around 17,000 foot. So that can tell you just about, you know, you can almost double that to the altitude it was they were dropped at, deployed. So they don't ignite right as soon as they're deployed, not the LUU-2 flare.
No. Mm-hmm.
The 17,000 foot is incredibly high to practice dropping flares.
Well, yes, it is. And so what are you saying about that? Are you saying that indicates that the flare drop was an especially ordered flare drop?
Absolutely. It was what I call, it was the perfect diversionary tactic to do, because six civilians got video of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing people need to think about this in the videos that everybody sees of the Phoenix Lights worldwide, there was only 20 or 25 people that actually saw that as it happened. All your witnesses are in the 8 o'clock hour for the most part.
There is something else that a lot of folks don't know, is that this was not just one craft.
No.
Tell us about the multiple craft and why we know that there were multiple craft.
Well, the sighting at 5:30 that night in Crown King, Arizona, which is northwest of Phoenix, about 65 miles. There's an area before you start coming down the mountain towards the Valley of the Sun, and it's called Sunset Point. It's right off the interstate. There are reports from 16 individuals who took the time to file the report. And it was 5:30. They stopped to look at the mountains to the west there, Sunset Point. They saw three of the boomerang craft over Crown King area, which is just a little bit west. And there were two fighter jets in the report that came up from the south. And this is the part, Kevin, that will never appear on a TV show. It'll never be talked about on television by any news crew or no one, is as two fighters were coming up from the south, these three V-shaped craft pancaked on top of each other, formed a white ball of light, and vanished. 16 witnesses.
16 witnesses. Now,
yes.
Do you know, among those witnesses, do you know if there were any pilots?
I am not privileged to those reports. You could probably find those reports through Michael Tanner. That'd probably be the one. He collected all the information, him and Francis Barwood, pretty much. There's the main archives. MUFON did very little interviews. They did very little record keeping. They were transfixed with those six 10 p.m. videos. I mean, they were totally fixated with that. That was enough for them. That's why I wrote that article called The Non-Investigation of the Phoenix Lights. And, but Michael Tanner would probably have those reports, and he could answer that question for you.
I believe there was a pilot in another area just a little bit later that saw the craft. Tell us about that.
Okay, he was located with his son. They were located well north of Phoenix in a Cave Creek area, which is probably about 25 miles north of Phoenix. He is a pilot. He's a retired pilot from Northwest Airlines. His son called him out there. It was around 10:20 that night. And they witnessed a string of red lights in V formation coming right at him. Now, he's a retired airline captain. His name's Trigg Johnston. And his report can be found at the UFO Chronicles in full, his report and his letters to John McCain. Anyway, he had the craft pass over his son's head. And he said, as a pilot now, he said it had an inside area of over a square mile, and I could easily land my 737 on it. And he watched it go south over Phoenix and then bank to the right towards South Mountain. And this was at 10:20 p.m.
Okay, now, this happened at about the time the flare drop is taking place, right?
Yes, yes. The flares were towards Barry Goldwater at the southwest part of the state, I'd say south-southwest of Phoenix, south of Casa Grande and towards Yuma, mm-hmm. and then a little bit towards Tucson is the Barry Goldwater training facility. It was noted that the Maryland Air National Guard supposedly dropped them at the north TAC range, which would be the furthest part, the furthest north part of the Barry Goldwater range. And that's where the flare drop occurred. And he would be north of Phoenix, probably around 20, 25 miles, versus the lights would be south, southwest of Phoenix, probably between 45 and 50 miles. So mm-hmm. it's probably 100 miles apart between the two.
All right. So we have a retired commercial airline pilot. And this thing flies right over his head. At about the time the flares are being dropped in the south, really the extreme south end of the county, you don't go very much past Goldwater range until you're out of the county.
No, and, well, you'd be out of the country, too.
Well, that's true. That's true. Okay, from where he was located at Cave Creek or Queen Creek?
It's Cave Creek.
Cave Creek.
It's north of Phoenix, mm-hmm. north of Scottsdale. Cave Creek's a very, very nice area in the Boulders, and it's north of Scottsdale a little bit. I'd say 20, 25 miles north of downtown Phoenix, then a little bit east.
He would have been at that location extremely hard-pressed to even see those lights being dropped in the south end of the county.
Oh, no, he was on the valley floor. He would never have seen those, no. No, the only ones that really saw those distant lights at between probably around 10:05 and 10:15 when those videos were shot would be people that are in mountainside homes. Mm-hmm. They'd be at a higher elevation. Mike Christen, Dr. Lynn, Terry Proctor, Chuck Reardon, even Tom King and Steve Blounder were in Ahwatukee at a mountainside home. So the ones that shot the video all had a higher elevation in which to look.
Okay.
Captain Johnston would not have been. He would have been basically what you call the valley floor, and he would have probably been maybe around 1,200 foot altitude versus the other ones probably around 2,500, 2,000.
Okay. So what we've got, what we've got is a break coming up here in just seconds. We'll pick up here when we come back, and we will continue right after this, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Mike Fortson, and we're talking about an event that has come to be known in the popular vernacular as the Phoenix Lights. But folks, as both Mike and I have pointed out, it's not really the Phoenix Lights. It was a massive craft. In fact, three, based on witness accounts, that flew over the Phoenix area. And this was March the 13th, 1997. People on the ground who saw this thing fly over had an interesting response to it, didn't they, Mike? I mean, you didn't hear anybody saying they were terrified.
No, absolutely not. Almost everybody to the T said how friendly it was, how warm and fuzzy, how non-threatening. You'd think if you saw what we saw that, you know, some people would actually run to the hills. I mean, just pack their bag and leave or jump under the bed. There was none of that. There was no violence. There was no abductions. There was No women impregnated. And, you know, they're talking about the children of the Phoenix Lights now. And that's just pure hogwash. There was no violence. There was nothing. It was a totally peaceful event. And actually, Kevin, the word float by is more truthful because people commented as to how slow it was. And not to say it flew by, because that would mean speeds greater than 100 miles an hour, but it actually floated by. And there were three of the V-shaped craft for sure, but Max and Shala Saracen out by Gold Canyon to the east saw a completed triangle. It was a full triangle, not an open boomerang or a V-shape, but it was triangular shape. And Shala Saracen was the one who commented that the back windows of the craft that she could see beings.
Now, that's one that I had not heard. So let's talk about that just a moment. Tell us about that. Who is this, and what did she see?
Well, Max and Shala Saracen are them, and they're actually witnesses in the 8 o'clock hour and the 10 o'clock hour. There was two sets of witnesses that saw both events. One was Terry Proctor. He shot 8:30 video, and he also shot 10 o'clock video from his home in Phoenix. And Max and Shala Saracen saw the triangle in the 8 o'clock hour and saw a later array of red orbs in the 10 o'clock hour. Shala, they're both real estate agents in East Mesa. They had a property that was approximately 2 miles in length, two city streets. It was like from University to McKellips type in length, and 2 miles. And she said the back end of the triangle encompassed their entire property. And there is a picture of it in the UFO magazine that was in March of 2000 of her drawing where it just went over the top of the telephone lines. And it was, in fact, a triangle.
All right, now who did you say had a video from the 8:30 sighting?
Terry Proctor's got the real grainy 8:30. We assume it's 8:30. Now, nobody knows for sure because it's not timed or dated on the video. And that's what hurts a lot of these videos, is they're not timed or dated. You're going by an approximation as to when the person who shot the video says it was.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1997, Kevin, I'll be honest with you, the quality of video shot at night is really not that good.
Mm-hmm.
And where oranges may be white on the film, and you can't really see. We didn't get the zero lux type cameras out there for a couple more years yet. But Terry Proctor does have an 8:30 video. I have a copy of it. And, you know, if you want me to send it to you, I'd be more than happy to share it with you.
Sure, I would love to see that. I have not seen that one. All I've ever seen are the videos of the flare drop.
Well, and that's all that's out there. That's all that's all they want out there is those flare videos, because that's what they do best. It's to confuse, and it's basically their way of derailing the event. I don't want to use that word because that new TV show is out, The Event, but it's what they do to take the steam out of it. And it's just like you were talking about earlier about the Air Force officers that came forward in Washington. These people are very brave in what they did, and it was the debunkers that came out and attacked them. It was the guy from the Washington Post who said he went for the cookies. Now, these guys were responsible for nuclear weapons, launching nuclear missiles that could start World War III and destroy the whole planet. And yet this guy wrote in his little side column at the Washington Post that he was there for the cookies. Can you imagine that?
Well, you know, it tells you exactly what sort of journalist this is.
Yeah.
He's a hack. And look, it doesn't matter. I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know the name. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how famous he may be and what a reputation he may have. Nothing like that matters at all. What matters is what kind of journalist is he. He's a hack.
Yes, yes. Well, it was an article today that was posted in the UFO Chronicles by Robert Hastings himself. And the headline in January 19th of 1979 was, "What Were Those Mysterious Craft?" And that's when they were talking about the UFOs over the missile sites some 6-7 years earlier. And this guy here, well, I can tell you what his name was. His name's Art Harris, and he's with the Washington Post, and he basically was there for the free cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And that just tells you how absurd the press is. And you know, until the American people get fired up and they start threatening politicians with not giving them their vote unless they are for the truth and open disclosure, we're going to continue having this.
Well, I think we'll continue having this anyway because politicians will say anything in order to get your vote. And then what they do after they're elected, you know, very often is 180 degrees from what they promised.
Well, I don't think we're going to get disclosure in the current administration. I don't believe that's going to happen.
Well, it depends. You know, if here's the deal. If what we're talking about is someone in the government stepping up to the microphone and officially saying, okay, folks, here are the facts about UFOs and extraterrestrials, and then they tell us the facts, and, you know, if that's what we're talking about with disclosure, I don't think it's ever going to happen. Because in doing that, they're going to have to take responsibility for some extreme high crimes that have been committed against American citizens, in order for them to keep their little secret. Well, the cat's out of the bag, and disclosure, I think, is happening. And it's happening with press conferences. For instance, the Disclosure Project, you had high-quality witnesses step forward and say what they know. Here, you have extreme high-quality witnesses with his last press conference, and they stepped forward and told what they knew, what they had seen, and what they had experienced, and they said, look, to the press, you know, folks, this is real.
Yeah.
You know, this happened. To their credit.
And Leslie
Kane's
book.
Yeah. Now, to their credit, some of the major media have reported this as straight news. CNN did. Fox News did. I think CBS did.
That's correct.
So to their credit, some of the major media, some of the mainstream media, just reported it straight. No chuckles, no diminution of the information. They just reported it. And CNN actually streamed the whole event live.
Yes.
And so, you know, as I said on one show, they're late to the dance, but at least they got here. And so maybe they're waking up. But here's the deal, Mike. Who in the government told them it was okay to treat this as straight news? In 1947 at Roswell, the radio station in Roswell was threatened with loss of their FCC license if they said anything else about it.
I believe that.
And since then, the notion that we have a free media, free press, freedom of the press, that notion has been fiction since that day.
Well, I agree with that, but it's on who owns the station, who owns the newspapers, and you know, I mean, the powers that be aren't really the reporters. The power of the bees, the ones that pull their strings.
Mm-hmm.
And even though all of them reported what happened last week, what's in the news today? Is there a public outcry? Is there a demand for the truth? Is there a demand for more? And I'm not seeing that. And I find that as frustrating as somebody. I've only been in this for about 13 years, so. In all honesty, I find that frustrating. I think the demand should be there. I mean, we're talking about nuclear missiles. We're talking about them being shut down by UFOs. We have the commanding officers and retired military from, I mean, all the way back. I mean, you can talk to James Fox and Out of the Blue, I Know What I Saw, the book by Leslie Keene, what they had Governor Symington in a couple years ago at the National Press Club. And they get the press, they get the publicity, they get things out there, but a few days later it all goes away and there's no demand for the truth. And I find that troublesome.
Well, people are worn out. They really are. People are absolutely just worn out. They've been through the ringer and are still going through the ringer financially. And then, you know, there's news of earthquakes and volcanoes and an asteroid's coming past the Earth and it may or may not strike us. And And then they tune in to talk shows in this genre. And talk shows in this genre, a lot of them try to scare the hell out of people by telling them they're all going to die in 2012. And, you know, it's just one thing after another. And they're just emotionally, psychologically worn out. They just don't have any oomph left. And that's partly why there's no reaction in the news like that. And that may be actually planned. That might be part of the plan.
I don't disagree with you, Kevin. But, you know, what I got to see 13 and a half years ago, I'll be mm-hmm. honest with you, I still want to know what it is, what it was, why it was here. You know, those questions, you know, it's 13 and a half years. I really hope in my lifetime, and I'm 57, is I hope sometime in my lifetime I actually find out what it was, what its purpose was, and why it was here.
Yeah, and I think people who actually saw it would be in the same boat with you. But the general population didn't see it, and they are just psychologically worn out.
Just be at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I still kick myself for not grabbing a camera. We were frozen. Other than our jaws being on the ground, we didn't move. I mean, we didn't yell, we didn't move, we didn't do anything. And if I have that opportunity again, I guarantee you, my camera's within arm shot at all times. So I just hope I get another chance.
How did it strike you emotionally when you saw it?
Well, you're confused. In the beginning, it's like a confusion because what you're seeing is not supposed to exist. Now, we saw it come in from the northwest, and I was in the southeast, so I'm looking through the gray background of the Phoenix metro area city lights, and as it came through, we didn't have any trouble identifying it as a single object. And that's not supposed to exist. We kept asking, what is that? You know, what is that? You know, I mean, then I held my hands out. And it was like from the nose of the craft to the end of the left wing, it was like 34 inches long at arm's length. And I'm just, you're in amazement. It's not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to see it. It's something you've been told all your life doesn't exist, and there it is. It's kind of like if you were to look out into the evening sky and see the hand of God come through, you're going to take a step backwards, and you're going to be speechless. You're going to be confused, and that's pretty much the state that most people were in. I mean, it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything close to it. I've seen three suns born. I've been a president, Nixon, President Ford, 71 to 75. All the things I've done in my life, but nothing even comes close to this. I mean, it's in a level all by itself, Kevin.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Mike Fortson, and we're talking about this amazing event that took place March the 13th, 1997. For shorthand and in the popular vernacular, it is called the Phoenix Lights, but it is so, so much more than that. When we stepped away for break, Mike, I had just asked you, how did it affect you emotionally when you saw this giant craft flying over you? And you said it was just the most amazing thing that ever happened, but was there any hint of fear at all in you?
None whatsoever. None. There was no fear that you have to protect something or your wife or your kids or anything. There was no fear. It was a totally friendly and peaceful event. There, I mean, as low as it was, as large as it was, it made no noise. There was no destruction. There was no nothing. It was a totally friendly event. It was basically a parade saying, this is what we can do. And we actually, how many times in your life, I say this a lot, is how many times in your life do you tell yourself not to blink? And this was one of them. you wanted to take it all in. I never thought of getting a camera. I never thought of getting anything. I concentrated on what I was seeing, and I actually told myself not to blink. So of all the things that's happened to you in your life and everything else, how many times have you told yourself not to blink?
Well, I can think of twice, and both times there was a gun pointed at me, so I didn't want to blink. And my emotions were quite different from what you were feeling.
Absolutely. Amazement would be in there. And those emotions did a 180 within the next 30 hours. And the reason for that is how witnesses who were trying to communicate on AM or FM radio or TV, however they were trying to communicate their sighting and everything, they were ridiculed, teased, made fun of. And this type of attitude by the media really stopped a lot of people from calling in.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until Frances Emma Barwood got involved that people felt relaxed and comfortable to call her, and she actually did. She listened to their sightings. She took the notes. But for the most part, you went from, you know, thankful to be able to see it. I give thanks every day that I gave, that I was given the time and the ability to see this. If you read my report, the first seven words was, I awoke from a brief nap. I woke up and went and closed the window, and there it was. If I'd have slept another 30 seconds, I would not have seen it. So I'm very thankful I got to see it. So I want to make sure that that gets portrayed.
All right. Now, this craft, or at least one like it, because we know there were three, but this was seen from the north end of the state to the south end of the state.
More than that, Kevin. Actually, it was seen in the northeast part of the state. That's why nobody really knows just how many there were. There was known three of them at Crown King at 5:30. But I did a radio show in Prescott, I think in the 10-year anniversary or something like that, when I was living way up north. And there was a city councilman from Chino Valley that came up after the show, and he goes, Mike, he goes, I was coming back from Flagstaff, and cars were stopped along the interstate between Cordes Junction and the Sedona exit, from Sedona until Cordes Junction. And cars were pulled off in the interstate. Now, That changes everything from the very first sightings up in Kingman, which is in the northwest part of the state, because here now they are up in the northern part of the state, dead center, and Arizona is a very large state, and there's nothing that could be seen coming through Flagstaff heading towards Sedona could be seen in Kingman.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all over the state, and that's, like, again, that's why I wrote that article called The Non-Investigation of the Phoenix Lights. The MUFON people stayed with the 10 o'clock videos, and that was their holy grail, so to speak.
Why do you think they did that?
Well, I got a personal reason, if I can say it, is a lot of these MUFON people, they pay their expenses out of their own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to travel up north and meet witnesses, you got gas, you got motel, you got to meet with the people. You know, there's a considerable expense, and I work for a safety company out of my home office in Gilbert, and I traveled the entire state, so it gave me the ability to communicate with people all over the state of Arizona, which I would take names and phone numbers and give them to Michael Tanner, or, you know, Frances Barwood and I were very good friends by then, and, you know, she got the names and numbers of the people up north that she could talk to.
Mm-hmm. Well, that you've sort of been in a unique position. I'm sorry?
I said I was a witness, but I was a very helpful witness. I was very much involved. I was in Village Labs three or four times a week for months and months and months. I could walk into Village Labs, meet with Michael and Jim, and I would get the latest reports. I mean, they get stuff up north. When I go up there, I would check them out. It was widespread. It's all over the state of Arizona. It's just not Phoenix. That's just not fair. Most of them equate the Phoenix Lights, the term Phoenix Lights, to the six videos that were shot of supposedly a flare drop. And even those lights weren't even over Phoenix or even over Maricopa County. So the term Phoenix Lights is moot. It means nothing for March 13th. It's just, it got tagged Phoenix Lights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not that descriptive or accurate.
Well, yeah, and you know, Arizona. Sometimes people have the idea that Arizona is all desert. It's not.
No.
Just north of Phoenix, you start up into the mountains.
Yes.
And you start into a very wooded area. And then when you get up in the north end of the state, you have kind of high plains across the Navajo Reservation. At one point there, it's just kind of wide open, kind of rolling hills. And so the point is that you have all different kinds of terrain, all different kinds of elevation, and you're having these sightings of this craft all over Arizona. And at one place we know there were three. Now let's go back to that for just a moment. I have a question about the jets. You told us about, I believe you said it was, I could be wrong, I think you said it was the around 8:30
where the three King.
Yeah, where the three pancaked on top of each other, 5:30?
5:30 p.m. Crown King, Arizona. It's just north of Phoenix, probably about 65 miles.
Okay. So at that point, they saw two fighter jets, I guess, approaching these craft. Is that right?
Yes, it's coming from the south heading north, yes.
So if it's coming from the south, it's coming from Luke.
Luke Air Force Base.
Uh-huh. All right, and so did it appear that they were just sort of flying aimlessly or on purpose headed towards these craft?
On purpose heading towards the craft, on purpose. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, you know, the Air Force people there at Luke Air Force Base, I guess, were under orders to tell the lie. But they said... officially that they didn't know anything about it. They didn't see anything. They didn't scramble any planes. But what you're telling us is that they did scramble two planes.
That's correct. At least three different times. And I have a copy of the Freedom of Information Act that John Greenwald put together for Bill Hamilton about this. And Luke called them unusual aerial objects, is what they call them. They didn't call them UFOs or anything else. They didn't say they were planes or blimps or flares or anything. They called them unusual aerial objects, unusual aerial phenomena, and also they put in there, we don't know who started the words about flares, but they did not. But as far as Luke was concerned, it was unusual aerial objects.
Well, there you go. I mean, it doesn't matter if they call them gloom globbers. You know, whatever you call them, if you're describing something that's in the air and the Air Force says we don't know what it is, that's good enough. Unusual aerial objects, unusual aerial phenomena, unidentified flying objects, or gloom globbers. Doesn't matter. It's all the same. All right, we've only got about a minute here until we go to break. There were 16 witnesses to this. Did all 16 of these people say that they saw those jets?
Yes.
Well, that's pretty tight testimony. I mean, that's pretty airtight. The thing that bothers me, though, Mike,
pulling off the interstate to see the objects, and then at that point in time when the jets were coming up and the objects pancaked on top of each other, formed a white ball of light and vanished. At that point in time, there were 16 people there. Now, I got to ask you a question, Kevin. If you pull over to the side of the road, now I don't stop unless we need
to. Okay, tell you what. Okay. This break is going to take over. Ask me the question after the break, okay?
Okay, very good.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Mike Fortson. Let me welcome all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that had you too busy to be with us in the first hour, because you really have missed a lot of very important information. But we're glad you're here now. When we went to break, Mike, you were about to ask me a question.
And I went totally blank on it, Kevin, and I totally forget what it was. I have no idea where we were. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, let me go back to this, the Freedom of Information reports. Where Luke Air Force Base said that these were unusual aerial objects or unusual aerial phenomena.
Yeah.
You know, here's the deal. Now, publicly, originally, they said they didn't scramble any jets. But here's the deal. They're admitting that there was something up there. That's what they're admitting. It doesn't matter what they call it. What they're admitting in that Freedom of Information, in the Freedom of Information documents that you referred to, what they're admitting is that there were unusual objects in the air.
Yes.
And so, you know, this is important, and this is very, very important, because now we have debunkers trying to make flares be the story. When we have a report from the Air Force that sent the jets up to look at it, admitting that there were objects there. They were not flares. They were objects, unusual objects. And that's critically important.
Yes, and they made it clear that after all, their planes were up in the air in a time where they originally said they were not.
Yes.
There's three different times in the... Let's see, that was 5:30, about 8:15, 8:20, and again in the 9 o'clock hour, there are reports of jet interference. Plus, in the West Valley, out by Goodyear, you have Scott Montgomery, who was videotaping red orbs over Luke Air Force Base, and that's when truck driver Bill Greiner said he pulled his truck into Luke Air Force Base, or by Luke Air Force Base. And there was two fighter jets with afterburners ablazing, in his words, that took off after the orbs. Now, Scott Montgomery got that on video, if you want to call it that. His camera, he was looking through the eyepiece. He was jumping around from the orbs to the planes, planes to the orbs. What I told people was, when they discounted his video, was, is don't even look at the video. Listen to the excitement in the young man's voice and what he was seeing, fighter jets chasing red orbs. You know, so Scott Montgomery is one of the missing people in the reports of the Phoenix Lights case, because his video was discounted because it goes, you know, he was looking through the eyepiece. He didn't have one of these windows that pop out or anything. He was looking through the eyepiece. He was totally excited. You could just hear the adrenaline in his voice as to what he was seeing. And, you know, this is just another incredible event that happened that night, other than just a string of lights going from the northwest to the southeast.
Well, I think we were talking earlier about disclosure, and I think what we're getting here tonight is disclosure. Yeah, it's true that we don't have someone from the government stepping to the microphone and telling us, but we do have the information out of the reports from Luke Air Force Base, and that tells us it's not flares. It's real objects. We don't know what they are, and we did send jets up to look at them. And that's disclosure right there. And people who want to stick with this notion that it was all flares, what they're asking us to buy is that some 10,000 people were all wrong. Their eyes played tricks on them, all 10,000 of them. And their minds completely misinterpreted everything. All 10,000 of them. Preposterous.
I've done a couple radio shows with a guy in Tucson by the name of James McGee. And we did a couple national shows out of New York City. And, you know, people catch on to the debunker real quick. Now, there's nothing wrong with saying they're skeptics, because I consider myself a skeptic. I don't believe everything I see. I don't believe all this. I'm skeptical, and Frank Warren's helping me through this and so forth, but the debunker is one who deceives and lies. And, you know, and James, these people don't really have a chance if they go up against somebody that is knowledgeable and aware and has met the witnesses and so forth. I mean, I beat the living tar out of this guy. And when he goes on Larry King, I mean, you can look at him and watch him, and nobody falls for his lies. You know, very few people fall for that. So I don't have a problem going up against these people. I just don't like them. I don't like what they're doing. It's as if they're paid to do this through PSYCOP or CSI or whatever they want to call themselves now. I really don't believe the debunker even believes what they're saying. They're just paid to say it or told to say it.
Okay, now do you have any actual evidence that these organizations you mentioned are paying these people to debunk, or is it just your opinion that that must be going on?
Well, it'd be strictly my opinion, Kevin, but why would you want to go on TV and just sit there and lie and act totally foolish for free?
Well, that's a good question. Good question indeed. All right, I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us in this discussion. The telephone numbers, ladies and gentlemen, are the main number in the studio, 623-444-5889. If you need to call me toll-free, you may do so, and in Canada and the USA. And that number is 888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that main number and we'll be glad to take your call. It will work anywhere on the planet. However, I don't have a toll-free number for outside of the USA and Canada. So, what I've done for those of you who are not in Canada and you're not in the USA, what you can do is go to my website, look at the graphic, the picture about tonight's show, and on the right side of that, you will see a link that says Flash Message. You can use that. And totally free, send me your question or comment. You must be outside the USA or outside of Canada, because my filters will prevent me from seeing it if you're in the USA or Canada. Why? Because we have telephones for you. And I'll even pay for the call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Rick. Rick from Kentucky.
Hello, Rick.
Before the show, I was looking at your webpage, and I went to Mike's link for his site. And what pops up, it says big X mark, and it says IP... banned. This IP has automatically been banned by Protector Systems. You probably know the reason.
I was not aware that we had even linked anything.
Well,
Mike, do you have a website?
Well, I personally do not have a web page. All the stories I write and all my interviews and everything else are found at theufochronicles.com. It's Frank Warren's website, and he's been so generous to put a blog there for, or not a blog, but a little icon there for the Phoenix Lights, and you'll see Stephenville there, Aztec there, and then once you get the site loaded up, if you scroll way down on the right-hand side, then you'll see mugshot of me and all the stories that I write there are there, but my website does not exist. I strictly use the UFOChronicles.com.
Okay. Well, that's a mystery to me. That's, Rick, I don't know what to tell you about that.
Yeah.
I didn't put a link there, so if there's a link there, it has been done for me.
And it does have it on the same page. It does have jward42@bellsouth.net. So somehow it is connected to it. If you get a chance and during the show, you might click on it and see what you think. It's
okay.
Kind of shocked me.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
You, Kevin. Bye bye.
Bye. All right. Another mystery, Mike.
I hope you don't mind me plugging Frank's website.
No, Frank Warren and UFO Chronicle, these are, it's an excellent person and an excellent site. Not a problem. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello there, Kevin. Hello there. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. It's been a long time since I've called in the Kevin Smith Show. It's finally been able to get to do it. You know, I'd like to ask you, what's the possibility that much of the UFOs, like, of course, as you know, Blue Book says that 10%, only 10% of the UFOs can be deemed as unknown phenomena. What's the percentage of this unknown phenomena, like, including the Phoenix Lights and what happened in Phoenix, that these could actually be ultra-top secret military aircraft, and they'll use any excuse to get people away from that explanation, including the alien explanation for that. Now, I'm not discounting that these things could be extraterrestrial craft. I'm not ruling that out either. But is it possible that these may, in fact, be some sort of top secret aircraft that they just don't want people to know the truth about?
Well, for questions to me, I would say, of course, it is possible. We can't rule anything out. I think the last time really super secret technology got out that we had was the F-117A, and that was when we invaded Panama, I believe. So the B-2 bomber came out right after that. So it's been about, 30 years now? So, I mean, you can't say no to that. I just, as a person who was born in the Air Force, raised in the Air Force, I'm ex-Navy, is I have a problem with the size of the craft I saw, that it went so slow and that it did not make a sound. And as somebody who's been associated with the military, is what we have makes an incredible amount of noise, even the B-2 bomber or any of these. To be able to do what this did in 1997, part of me says, no, that's absurd. It can't be. But part of it has to be, well, of course it is. It could have been a psychological effect. It could have been, you know, something. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't fall for that. I mean, I've talked to many, many witnesses that saw pretty much what I saw. But, you know, you got to leave the door open. You can't close it, that it wasn't ours. But I have a problem, again, with the size. That's the part that shakes everything, is the size of the craft. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Well, let me throw 2 cents in here.
Is there any instance in...
Kevin, hang on just a minute. Let me throw 2 cents in answer to your question, okay?
Identity on who...
Are you listening?
This
no, you're not. Okay, Kevin, the idea that these could have been our top secret craft, I would say it is a possibility... Except we have those reports from the Freedom of Information Act. We got the reports from Luke Air Force Base. Now, if those were our top secret aircraft, then they would have either been told don't scramble jets, or they would have written a report that says this test was a success, the object was, or the craft was observed, blah, blah, blah. But they didn't do that. They said these were unknown aerial objects. And because of that, I would say Luke Air Force Base had no idea what they were. They're not ours. Okay. All right. Mike, what would you say about that comment?
Well, I agree with you, but for me to say 100% with certainty that they're not ours, I truthfully, if you and I were sitting next to each other talking about this, I would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it, publicly, you have to leave the door open just a little bit, however small, that it would be some gesture by, I don't know, some dreamland or fantasy land of the branch of the Air Force that they did this. I don't think that's what it was. I've always said ever since March 14th, 1997, that what I got to see was not of this earth. And I always say that.
All right. Then
stories come out where, you know, they try to put hypothetical situations out there to make it ours. But the problem, Kevin, is size, speed, no noise. And when they can conquer those things, or do a reenactment, that's the key. Okay, if it's ours, go ahead. You ran it through the illegal airspace of Sky Harbor Airport. You ran it all the way through the state of Arizona. And not only did we have one of these craft, but we had at least three. And then what Max and Shala Saracen saw, we'd need a fourth craft. And now we're getting more and more into our inventory here. Let's do a reenactment. What do you say? And nothing. It goes quiet. They go to commercial. There's no way they can do a reenactment. You know?
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Yeah, Ryan.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I was wondering if maybe the lights on the craft that you saw, the lights were actually able to detach from the craft as sort of a scout ship and then attach back to it, because I've heard several accounts from people that said that they witnessed those lights detaching from the triangle or boomerang and then reattaching.
That is totally correct.
If maybe there's somebody that's listening in the Phoenix area that saw it, that could call in and tell us their story of witnessing the event, that'd be interesting to hear, because there's always a new witness that seems to pop up somewhere. But have you heard that before, Mike, about
these lights? Yes, absolutely. From the very beginning, from the very, very beginning, there were people that along the sides of the craft reported white lights, and most of them reported red lights. And there were people that saw the red orbs, and there were people that saw the amber orbs. But there was always been speculation that those orbs could detach. When I saw them, they were along the side of the craft, and they were bright red. They were bright red, not an amber. They were bright red. The trailing orb at the end of the craft was bright red. And a lot of people have seen where along the side of the craft it was white. And the speculation was that the red orb detached. It did its thing. The red orbs that were seen over Luke Air Force Base, and that's way west of me. That'd be 60 miles west of my location during the sighting, where Scott Montgomery and also Bill Greiner saw the jets chasing the red orbs. They were red orbs. No one at that point in time said they were attached to a craft. These were independent orbs. So what you said is exactly correct. It goes right with witness testimony, and that's a great question. I'm glad you've heard that before. At least the story's getting out. Good question.
Well, I've heard people describing that on several different places, but one other question I wanted to ask you was: when you saw it, did you were you able to determine the? Well, we know the length was. What I mean is the vertical, the thickness of it. Like the if you looked at it from a side angle,
Yeah, we understand. How thick is it from top to bottom?
Top to bottom. Yeah.
In my original report, I reported it at arm's length as the nose of the craft passed in front of me, and I held out my left hand, and I held my right hand out. It was approximately 33, 34 inches in length. If I were to do my index finger and my thumb at arm's length, I would say it's about an inch and a half thick, if that makes any sense to you. It's a good question, but it was flatter than it was not thick by no means. It was, it was thick enough where it had the orb, and that was about it. And I don't know if that makes sense or not, but one of my original drawings was in the UFO magazine, March 2000. I don't know if you can get a back order or anything. When I drew that, it was, like I said, as it was coming towards us, I even told my wife, I said, that SOB's a mile long. And as if it was a mile long from the nose of the craft to the end of the left wing, it was probably an inch and a half thick at arm's length. I hope that answers your question. That's about the best I can do on that one.
Yeah. That answers my question. Maybe if there's somebody in Phoenix that's listening right now, just dial the number and tell us what you saw. I would always love hearing more witness accounts. And thanks for taking my call. It's a very interesting show tonight.
All right. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Toll free, 888-223-4599. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can either call our main number, that's the 623 number, 623-444-5889, or you can send me a flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Ah, so sorry you hung up. Mike, when you say at arm's length, the thickness of this craft was about an inch and a half at arm's length, right?
Yes. If I were to hold my left hand out with my index finger on top and my thumb at the bottom, and if I was to hold it out as it passed in front of me, I would say that the thickness of it was about an inch and a half at arm's length. Now, it was approximately 2 miles west of me at that point in time. The nose of the craft, I reported, was going south down Alma School Road, and I was just east of McQueen and just south of Chandler Boulevard. And I said also that the end of the left wing itself was much closer, possibly even a half mile from me. So that will give you an idea as to the size of this thing.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Kevin, how are you?
Good.
Good. Mike.
Yes.
I've been hearing so much, you know, discussion about whether it's their craft or our craft. And from what I've been hearing, should we be more concerned that it's our craft and their craft, or their craft than our craft?
Wow, good question.
I mean, you know.
In all honesty, there's nothing to fear or concern, I don't think, either way. If it's their craft, I mean, they allowed people to see it. It's not only just been over Arizona in 97, but it's been seen all over the world since, and even before here in 97. I really don't believe it's ours. There's always that possibility, but I don't think so. I would be disappointed if it is ours because of all the turmoil that's been going on in the world for the last 10 years, that if we had a craft that might just scare the living bejesus out of these people, maybe that we could straighten them out. Maybe we could do something with that craft.
All right, we have to step away for break. If both of you guys will hang on for a minute, we'll get you right after the break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Mike Fortson. And, Mike, we have Rusty from Michigan online, and I think he asked a great question. Now, this question is, should we fear more if it's our craft or if it's an alien craft? And your answer was, you didn't see any need for us to fear either way.
That's correct. With what we saw and all the witnesses I've talked to, Kevin and Rusty, I mean, the witnesses are in the hundreds just that I've met, in the several thousands with Michael Tanner and Francis Barwood. All in all, it's into the thousands. There wasn't one person, not one, even the kids that were with their parents that saw this, that it claimed any fear or stress or anything like that. It was always friendly. It was warming. They gave thanks for seeing it. I mean, it was peaceful. It was friendly. I don't think there was anything to fear from this, and I really did not feel a threat. If it was ours, I'd probably be disappointed if we're not using that technology to, you know, get out of some of the messes we're in. I don't believe it's ours. So.
Okay. Well, I use that word fear, and perhaps I led my question a little astray. I may be concerned, but here's my main point. Here we are that has a government that perhaps has these machines that has been hiding it from us. When disclosure does happen, and we even know now that they've been lying to us, then we have the ETs on the other hand that are either in cahoots with the government or have not fully divulged themselves. Which one of them is the most deceitful party? I mean, let's say a politician steps forward and says, well, ETs are real. Let's say, just for argument, president says it. And then we have an ET that appears and says, yep, we're real. Here we are. Which one is going to be more believable?
Wow. I believe the ET. I'm 57 years old. I've been lied to ever since I was a kid by my government. I'd probably believe the ET that he's here. Yeah, I'd like to meet them, talk to them. I think it would be the ET. That's who I'd believe more, to be honest with you.
And do you have a criteria that would kind of tell you whether it was, I don't know how else to put this, whether it's a real ET or is it one of our manufactured beings that look like an ET?
I probably wouldn't be the one that would be lucky enough to be there in the flesh and see that personally. So that would probably never happen for me. There's a lot of tricks that can be played on us. Another good question, Rusty. I don't know how to answer that one. I really don't. How about you, Kevin?
Well, I don't know how we would be able to tell. And I've often said, and Rusty, you've heard me say this, if extraterrestrials actually did what the debunkers mindlessly and stupidly say, well, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? And I always say, why should they? Why should they even care about the White House? But let's say they did. You know, the mindset of most folks in America would be it's a Hollywood stunt.
Yes.
And, Rusty, were you listening the night when I asked people to call in and describe what would it take for you to say disclosure has happened? What would disclosure be for you? 100% of the people that called in said they would not believe the government.
Yes, I remember that.
Now, see, I'm not so sure that I'm not in that category. It depends on who is doing the speaking for the government.
Well, how about the newly appointed UN? Do I want to call it a czar? Or she, the lady from South America?
Yeah, she is the extraterrestrial diplomat.
Would you believe
or the
her?
Liaison with ETs. No, if it comes from the UN, I'm not going to believe it.
No.
Okay. You know, those are just, I mean, we're getting so many sightings of both, and I don't know as though, and it seems like if it was ours, I keep wanting to link it to a Nazi theme, that they're up to no good.
Well, look, that could be the case. I don't presume, and look, when I say this, I'm going to get tons of email telling me how naive I am. I don't presume that if the government does it, it's evil. I don't have that mindset. I also do not presume that if the government does it, it's good and okay. I think everything has to be taken on a case-by-case basis. And our government does some things right. Our government does some things wrong. And it's so big that if they do something wrong, it's very, very wrong. But they do some things right. And I don't come to this presuming that if our government does it, that it's going to be evil. So I don't necessarily connect this technology with the idea of Nazis.
No.
Now, I do connect NASA, at least in their past, in their history, with Nazis, because that's where many of the scientists came from. They were Nazis that were brought over in Project Paperclip.
Right.
So I do connect NASA to that in their past, but not necessarily in their present. But I think if we've got craft like that, we didn't get it from the Nazis. If we've got craft like that in any way, shape, or form similar to that, then we got it from back engineering downed alien craft.
Yes.
Right. All righty.
Well, if E.T. were to land, I'll be honest with you, I really feel that we'd do our best to trick them, to capture them, probably end up in a laboratory being dissected, but that craft itself would be back engineered with one purpose and one purpose only, and that would be to find out what their weapon systems is and how can we back engineer and have a bigger, more powerful gun. I think it's about weapons.
That, I think, has a very high probability that that's what we would do. And, you know, it's a shame, really. You remember when you were a kid, you and I are the same age. Remember when you were a kid, all the kids used to play outside, you know, and they used to play in each other's yards. And, you know, as long as you were on the same street, yeah, your parents didn't worry about anything. You were over at Stevie's house or whatever, you know. And everything was cool. And neighbors used to set out and talk with each other in the early evening, afternoon, early evening. They'd sit out in lawn chairs and drink iced tea and talk to each other. And
I do.
We now live, we're living on the same pieces of ground, the same pieces of dirt we lived on then. But we don't live in that world. We live in a world where we fear and suspect everybody. And where we have people in our government trying to make us fear even more and suspect even more. And, boy, if you suspect it, report it to us. Okay, well, this is a sickness. That's not security. This is a sickness. It's a mental illness. And, you know, just think, when you were even a teenager, Mike, when you were a teenager, if there was someone walking around, always looking over their shoulder, always suspicious of everyone, afraid of everyone, we would have had this person committed to a mental institution. Now we have a whole nation of it.
Yeah. Back in the 50s and the 60s, yes, you're absolutely correct. Well, heck, if you had people talking about what we're talking about tonight back in the 50s and 60s, you and I'd both be committed.
Got to catch me first. And I'm fast. But look, you know, we live in a world now, at least here, I can't speak for the whole world, and I can't speak for the whole nation. I speak for me. This is my observation of our nation. We're living in a soup that really is mental illness. The fear, the suspicion, ready to blame someone for everything. This is mental illness. This is not normal living. This is mental illness. And it's all across the nation. And into that, imagine an extraterrestrial craft landing and an extraterrestrial getting off of that craft and stepping into this soup of mental illness. I don't think it would be healthy for the ET. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Tracy from Canada.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Tracy.
Great topic tonight. I just was wondering if you guys had heard of the sightings that have been happening in Canada just last week?
No, I have not.
No.
Well, Montreal got buzzed so bad. It was right downtown Montreal.
Oh, I did hear about that.
It's been reported on CBC. Local news talked about it again today. And
what buzzed? What was it that buzzed over Montreal?
It's looking like an orb, Mike. And the same thing was seen in Nova Scotia on Monday, and then Wednesday in Montreal. Wednesday and Thursday in Montreal. Massive sighting, and they're not denying it.
What are they saying about it on the news?
Governments aren't denying it. What I heard from an astronomer yesterday actually was, no, we don't know what it is. We don't know. So,
did anybody get a video of it?
Yes. There's all kinds of videos on it. Just type in Montreal UFO sighting or Canadian UFO sightings July, because huge amount of sightings all over Canada, and they're not being hidden. So
how does the news treat them?
Disclosure is happening. I don't know what else anyone needs.
How is the news treating this in Canada?
They're here.
Tracy, can you hear me? Tracy?
Yes.
How is the news treating this in Canada?
They're just reporting it. They're not even being wise guy about it. They're just saying a whole bunch of people have seen these lights. Have you seen these lights? They're just saying it.
Good. That's good.
Coming right out. And for the most part, in Canada, we haven't had any official hiding of any of them, to be honest.
Well, you're very fortunate. That's all our officials have done with them, is hide them. All right, we are going to have to step away for a break. And when we come back from this break, we will be on Final Approach. That means, of course, that we'll only have a few minutes left. So if you've been wanting to call and haven't been able to, now might be a good time for you to get your fingers ready as soon as we're back from break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Mike Fortson, and we are discussing an event that took place in 1997, March the 13th, 1997. It has come to be known as the Phoenix Lights, but it is so very much more. And as you have heard during this show, it is a very well-documented event, and there is the report obtained through Freedom of Information Act from the Air Force, base just outside of Phoenix, that these were unusual aerial objects or unusual aerial phenomena. They saw them. They scrambled jets. They didn't call it flares, and they said the flare story didn't come from us. Mike, we only have a few minutes left, and folks, the phone lines are open if you want to give us a call. But let me ask you this question, Mike. All of the movies, almost all of the movies that we have seen about aliens coming to Earth, extraterrestrials coming to Earth, The Day the Earth Stood Still, War of the Worlds, even Independence Day, the extraterrestrials were bad news. thousands of people saw this thing, this huge craft, several huge craft, in the Phoenix area and all over the state of Arizona. And nobody stepped forward with that bad alien impression, with it, that they're hostile.
No.
How do you read that? Are they trying to program us to think that the extraterrestrials are, in fact, going to be bad for us? Is that what's up?
Well, I think Hollywood just wants to sell tickets. What happened in Arizona on March 13th was a very peaceful and friendly event. Now, there were two movies made about Phoenix, and they did involve blood and abduction, killing, and things like that, but none of that happened on March 13th, 1997, Thursday night. Hollywood just always feels that the sex, the violence, and the blood's what sells, and, you know, I mean, I can't think of too many peaceful events other than Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the original E.T. character with the little kids. I can't think, they're about the only ones that were really friendly. Signs with Mel Gibson, that was violent. I mean, they were all violent. But that just never happened. You know, the true movie of this would be pretty much a PG rating because nothing happened. I mean, it was just a friendly, totally friendly visit. I mean, there's no other words to describe it. It was non-threatening. So as far as Hollywood standards, it'd be pretty boring.
Well, there is a movie that was made, and I've seen it, and I can't remember the name of it. But it was made by someone in the Phoenix area, and it premiered in Tempe. And it's all about what happened in a person's life after seeing the Phoenix craft, the craft go flying over Phoenix.
Yes, I've seen that. I've met him, actually.
What? Can you remember the name of that movie? I can't remember it.
No, but I have a copy of it, and he was from out of state. I met him at a MUFON meeting here in Mesa, and I got to see it. We went down. He interviewed several of us. I agree with the meaning of it and everything, but I don't remember the name. I'm sorry. I have it. I have a copy of it filed away somewhere.
I have a
signed copy of it.
Yeah. Well, it would appear that someone is trying to get our minds programmed for whatever reason toward thinking that arrival of extraterrestrials might be harmful to us. And the reason I say that, I understand what you're saying about Hollywood, but what about Stephen Hawking? Stephen Hawking comes out and says, well, yeah, you know, extraterrestrials might be out there, and we don't need to be broadcasting to them because we don't need them to know where we are because it might not be good for us.
I think they found us a couple thousand years ago.
Yeah, it would seem so. Yeah. But, I mean, here's, you know, a scientist with a big reputation saying something
like that. Look what the Vatican's trying to do. I mean, that's a bold step for a massive worldwide, there's probably more Catholics than anything out there, and the Vatican's trying to make contact. The Vatican is saying, yes, that they exist. So I think that's equal, too.
Well, the Vatican wants to baptize them.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I think E.T.'s God and our God would be the same one. I mean, my God is the creator of all things, heaven and earth, so therefore he would be the creator of the E.T. or the E.T. presence as well. I hope that makes sense.
Well, it would appear then that there is a dichotomy in upper echelon, upper level opinions about whether E.T. is positive or negative for us. Because we have, you know, some people saying, look, this is a threat. This is something to be afraid of. And as I said, I think this is mental illness.
Well, and I agree. I mean, they've had how many thousands of years to take care of the solution here on Earth? I mean, they could have done it at any given time, way hundreds if not thousands of years before we developed nuclear weapons. I mean, if they wanted us, they could have had us at any time. I'm a believer that we're just observation for them. They're just watching us grow. I just think it's observation. I don't think there's a threat there at all. And, you know, I mean...
But let me say, that doesn't necessarily mean they're benevolent, like the, going to come here and fix your problems. I don't think that's going to happen either.
No, I just think they're watching us evolve and grow. What was it? I keep getting his name wrong. It's Michio Kaku.
You got it right.
When he was talking about the three types of civilizations, I mean three, two, and one in his speech that he gave, somebody asked him which Earth was, and he said Earth is a zero civilization. Mm-hmm. And he explained why. Well, our visitors may be from a one civilization watching us develop, mm-hmm. and also watching us destroy ourselves, because at any moment in time in my entire life, and I was born in 53, when we went through the Cold War and everything else, I mean, we're on the brink of nuclear disaster at any given time to wipe out the entire civilization. So, you know, I think they're aware of that. Now, they're just watching us grow and evolve, or they're going to watch us destroy ourselves.
Kind of like we watch the football games. It could just be that. It could just be, it's interesting, and it's entertainment for them just to watch us. It could be nothing more than that. Well, listen, Mike,
I hope I live to find out, Kevin.
Do what?
I said I hope I live long enough to find out for sure.
Well, I run an ad on our TV channel that for any... arriving extraterrestrials that I want an interview, and it ends by flashing on the screen, abduct us nightly at kevinsmithshow.com. I'm quite serious about that. All right.
Mine would be a lifting. It would not be an abduction. It'd strictly be a lifting. It'd be totally voluntary.
Totally voluntary. Well, mine would be too, because I want an interview. If I can't get an interview, it wouldn't be voluntary. But if I can get an interview... Yeah, that'd be voluntary. Mike, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring the show to a close. We're just about out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in interesting times. And here at the Kevin Smith Show, we try to bring interesting shows. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody. We'll be right back.